Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, we are back. Sid is here. We're in the process of calling a guest. In the meantime, Mike had a chance to catch up with a player that, well, he was cut earlier in the year. And Mike, I think a lot of people would be a little bit surprised.
Yeah. And let me just add one thing.
Yeah.
As you hear in this interview, he's a different person since he's been cut and come back. The humility of what Laquon Treadwell was his first 2 years compared to now is completely different.
I'm intrigued. Let's listen in.
Laquon, watching you guys against Detroit in this year, 6-0 at home. What does home field feel like? What's it meant to this team? And can you explain that, or is that just does that just come with having a good team?
It's kind of both. Obviously, a good team helps you win a lot of games on the road and at home. But being at home, that home field advantage, it's a familiar place to play. Kind of get the crowd involved. Every big player is probably twice as big when you make it at home. Probably you just get that extra time to prepare. Don't have to travel as much, don't have to do as much. And just get to continue to prepare and get ready for Sunday.
When you obviously you played here, you came back. How is it different when you come back, knowing what you know and what you've been through?
It's just about perseverance. Every guy, been through it. I'm just another guy in the league that's going through it right now. And I just stay focused on the moment, obviously I left and came back, but it just kind of gave me a new perspective. It's just day at a time, take it a day at a time, make the most of every opportunity. And I've been putting my effort and energy towards that.
When you watch Kirk Cousins, it just looks like he's systematic about whoever's open gets the ball. He doesn't even see who it is, et cetera. Explain that, because he targeted 11, 12 guys yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he works it all week in practice. He goes out to practice and he throws to the younger guys just in case their name is called, so he gets real familiar with every guy on the team. And we just do a good job of being in the right spot, understanding the concepts and what the coaches want, and being versatile, being able to play all positions. Our coaches, to really take pride in making us learn every position on the field, outside of the tight end and the running back position. But every receiver, you got to be able to play all four spots. So we all can do that, and that's what's really helping us, be effective.
Are you the most comfortable you've been since you've been in the NFL in terms of system and understanding?
Yeah, I am. As a whole, as a player.
Laquon Treadwell, like I said, one thing, Dave, and Sid, as we bring Sid into the conversation, Sidney, Kirk Cousins has one of the things that you hear about him when people assess him is he doesn't see people as much as he sees open jerseys. He's pretty systematic about the way if you get open, he's going to find you. And there's a lot of guys that have gotten, from C.J. Ham to Laquon Treadwell to B.Z. Johnson that maybe didn't know what their role is going to be that have had a chance to catch balls and gain some confidence here by December.
Mike, that's interesting because Vikings had 11 or 12 different receivers.
Yeah, 11 targets or something like that.
I mean, that's incredible. But that actually makes sense in light of what you just said. If he's got that quick peripheral vision to spot an open receiver, it's less important who it is than the fact that he knows he can slip the ball in there.
Sidney, how are you feeling about the Vikings? When you look at the Vikings today, you've probably covered them out in L.A. a few times. How do you feel about their chances today?
I think they should win. I think with Thielen back, make a big difference. I think that the Chargers are no great team, and I think you should win.
How about the Bears and Packers today? That's a very important game for Viking fans. How do you see the Bear-Packer game?
Well, I think the Packers will win. I think they're very good. I think they'll win. They're on a roll. The Packers are. I think they'll win.
Boy, we're looking at the TV picture.
Well, they weren't kidding when they said Kansas City's going to get some snow today, huh?
Well, it is really snowing in Kansas City. That could be an interesting game. You know, the Viking defense has pretty much been in, folks. Mike, you had a chance to catch up with one of the guys who's starting to play a key role.
Yeah, Anthony Harris is, you know, and he had he played well, and then they brought back Sendejo, who used to start in front of him.
Got a nice interception the last game.
Yeah, he's got a couple of picks, but Harris has been – he had the one pick six against Seattle, but he's kind of quietly become – a key cog there when he was out a couple weeks, they really missed him. We had a chance to visit. Anthony, it was a workmanlike win against Detroit, and then you turn the page and move on when you're in the playoff hunt. How does it feel around here in December? You've been in the hunt, and last year you guys weren't so much in the hunt. What's it feel like when you get here and you're playing for big stakes every week?
Anytime we can get to go out and, you know, play some football is good. You know, right now guys seem to be playing together, having a lot of fun flying around, so that's important. When you can go out and do that, use that translation to wins, you know, going out, executing, having fun, and putting together a formula to get some wins.
What's the study? You know, you talk about good quarterbacks. Of course, you just saw Russell Wilson, and now you're going to see another one in L.A. with Rivers and then Rodgers, and on we go. What's the film study like for a safety when you're preparing for a really good quarterback like that?
First of all, you really just want to get on the offensive scheme. You know what they want to do offensively, who they are, what's the identity. And then you can start getting into the finer details on, you know, who's on the center, some of their mechanics, try to get a feel for the timing, when the ball is coming out in certain situations, who they like to target and things like that. That's kind of some deeper details you can really get into later on.
So a guy like Rivers that's a veteran like that, they try to control the game, obviously. So is it more sophisticated? Is it what? Because they're constantly disguising, they're constantly doing what to you or trying to?
They've seen a lot of football.
Mm-hmm.
Usually
you ain't going to fool them?
Yeah, it's going to be hard to fool those guys. You know, they're here for a reason. Usually they have big arms. But a lot of those guys, they've seen a lot of defenses. So they know the coverages. They know where they want to go with the ball. And they do a good job of doing that. So you have to try to, you know, make those windows tight, disguise them and confuse them if you can. But mostly just playing with good technique and putting yourself in the position to make those plays when they're there.
Is your secondary playing as one? I mean, you know, the communication, the things, the nuances, all the things that you guys like to do?
Yeah, we try to just pick that up as an overall unit. Everybody's communicating from the back end to the guys at the second level. Just being on the same page pre-snap, communicating what routes and stuff we might get, and knowing where our help is to help each other out to be successful.
What is that like with you and Harrison then? Is it a lot of talking? Is it a lot of what?
We don't have to do too much talking. Yeah, we usually kind of see.
Just looking or not?
We kind of see the things pretty similar. So during the week, we look at the film, and individually he might bring up something that I've kind of looked at, and we kind of talk about it. But on the field, it's just, you know, a feel, playing off of each other, communicating when we need to on the sideline, pre-snap, sometimes in the huddle, and then just going to play fast.
All right, Anthony Harris become a key player. You know, they got a lot of interchangeable pieces, Mike. Well, they've got a real rotation going on in the defense.
I'll tell you, the scary part is when Mike Zimmer starts talking about Danielle Hunter hasn't reached his peak yet. He's, what, 50 sacks before 25, all those statistics that you throw at him. And he is as humble as they come, Danielle Hunter. And when Zimmer starts talking about there's still a couple more things that he can do, I mean, he's got 10 good years. That kid's going to make a lot of money before this thing's all done.
You know, one team we haven't talked about is sport. We haven't talked about, we talked hockey when we talked about Wooger, but we haven't talked about the Wild. Very somewhat quietly, the Wild has really picked things up and moved up in standings. I think they're like 1 point out of eighth place when I checked yesterday. May still be the same. And when it comes to talking hockey, Brian Lawton is always fun to talk to, and he's standing by to talk to us in about 3-4 minutes. So why don't we take a break here and change the topic to hockey and bring in Brian Lawton right after this. You're listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid, Dave, and Mike.
Welcome back, Sports Huddle. Mike, Max, Dave Bona, Sid Hartman taking you through it. Thad Levine will join us a bit later. Janelle McCarville will join us right now, the man that really knows hockey in the NHL because he's so well-versed in all of the teams, Brian Lawton. And, Lost, before we start with the NHL, you guys in the hockey community are pretty close, and we lost Doug Woog, someone that you knew very well.
Yeah, it was really, you know, it's a tough deal. For me, that's kind of the era that I grew up with when, obviously, Wooger was coaching at you, but I first met him, believe it or not, back in a Canada Cup in like 1984. He was one of the assistant coaches. Of course, Phil was on that team, and you know, that was kind of the beginning of quite an incredible run for Wooger. And he's just going to be sorely missed. I know Ben Hankinson and Chris McElhine would go on for hours about Wooger stories. And I really got a chance to meet him and spend a lot more time with him, even when I had one of my kids go into his camps up at Breezy Point. He was just a real, real nice man. And it's a big loss for the hockey community.
You think the Wild might make some moves to improve their team?
I do, Sid. I think they're looking at it. I think Billy Guerin has been very forthright. He's evaluating. I'd imagine from their management team's perspective, they would have looked at last year what happened and wanted to see what the direction was this year. We've seen them be absolutely horrible to start the season under an incredibly difficult schedule. And now we've seen them be tremendous to the point where I do think the management team will be looking at ways to improve this team because they recognize what a team like St. Louis did last year. And you guys have heard me talk about it in the past. St. Louis Blues really haven't been any better than the Minnesota Wild over the last 3 years. Anybody can win the Stanley Cup.
You know, Brian, it's just so weird to look at the standings in the paper. I think my eyes have been trained over the last four decades or more to look for the name of Chicago near the top of the standings in the Central Division. There they are in the bottom. Can you talk about the year that they're having?
Yeah, I mean, they've tried a lot of things. They've had a lot of activity. I don't know if I'd say it's productivity. They just can't get it going. They still have two star players, not unlike the Wild. Their guys are a little bit younger, but they're making quite a bit more, $10.5 million for Taves and Kane, of course. And then you got other veteran players that are left over from their incredible run when they won three Stanley Cups. And that, of course, is a guy like Brent Seabrook, Duncan Keith, and then Corey Crawford. So it's a transition phase for them right now, but they've been out of the playoffs way too long for them to be comfortable. So they're trying to do everything they can. They just have not found the right combination of coach and players.
Brian, obviously, like Dave said, the Wild play on the night, Wild won last night, et cetera, et cetera. But Devan Dubnyk, we're not quite sure his situation, how it'll all play out, and you just wish the best for him throughout. As a manager, how do you manage through this situation? Do you just say, Alex, I want you to think of yourself as the number one goalie for the rest of the year? How do you do it?
These ones are really touchy, Mike, and the one thing I love about the NHL is it's much more in tune as the world is with what's going on with these types of things. I knew a lot of players that would, guys would keep playing through some of this stuff. It's incredible. Back when I was playing, I saw some crazy things. This is the way it should be. What does that mean? It means you got to have patience with Devan in terms of Alex Stalock and Kapo for that matter. Those guys have done a pretty darn nice job filling in while Dubnyk's been gone. I do think because of the circumstances, he'll absolutely get an opportunity when he comes back to earn that number one starter's position. And, I look at a situation like when Marc-Andre Fleury was hurt and Matt Murray came in, and, the reality of it is that, Marc-Andre Fleury never really regained that number one position, eventually was moved to Vegas, and Matt Murray's been the starter. So, I've seen it every which way. Personally, I hope for and wish for the best for Devan and his family. He's an incredible guy. My firm used to represent him when I was an agent. They still do to this day, Mike Liut and Octagon. And, it's just been a tough situation that happens. But I do like the way the Wilds handle it. They have been nothing but first class towards him.
How's Sutton playing? Is he healthy? Is he playing well?
I think he means Ryan Suter.
Ryan Suter is playing as well as ever. His game is tremendous. He just doesn't get beat out there. I watched him very closely the other night, and there's just a lot to like in his game. Is he going to necessarily lead you to the Stanley Cup by himself at this stage in his career? No, but he's still an incredibly valuable piece for that team. He's still a leader on the decor back there, and I think he's stepped up a notch, quite frankly, since Jared Spurgeon has been out, and that's a great sign. But Ryan is one of these guys that's just freakishly strong. If you watch him out there, he just doesn't really get moved off of pucks and things. He's just you know, he's an incredible player. He's had incredible longevity. I'm sure now for Ryan, the only thing left is to prove that he's a championship player. And that hasn't happened for him yet in terms of a Stanley Cup. But whenever you talk to him, that's the focus has turned to that for him in his career.
You know, you're talking the Wild defense about Suter, but the defense in general, I saw some of that game last night, and I just couldn't believe the relatively long periods in which they like didn't see a single shot. So I looked at stats this morning, 18 shots on goal, only one of which went in. Somebody on defense is playing awfully well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you have to point to Carson Soucy first. He's the former University of Minnesota Duluth product, has been awesome. He's been a really nice feel-good story for the Minnesota Wild. And, I think that's probably been one of their bigger surprises. There's some other guys they expect a lot out of. Joel Eriksson, that's been good. Greenway's making progress. Donato's finding his game now. But there wasn't really a big expectation for Soucy. He's just been tremendous. And particularly with the injury to Spurgeon, he's just getting more and more opportunity. But you need that if you want to do anything surprising in terms of your team. You need players to step up. He's been a really great story.
Yeah, you mentioned Donato. When you interview him, he comes across as a kid that's gaining his confidence. You can see it before your eyes when you visit with him, that he's different now than when he got here last year in the rigors of the NHL. Brian, how long do you watch a player before you decide – either they can make it, or I know this is there's not a magic one answer, but how long do you watch? How many games do they have to have before you say, okay, this guy's going to be here for a while?
Yeah, I always think for the defenseman, you've got to give them at least a couple of hundred games, which is incredible at the NHL level before you even know what they can be. For forwards, I find that it's quicker. You know, if you can, but the thing you need to be careful of is you can't, I think you can do it in 100 to 120 games. But you have to be careful that the 100 to 120 games, they aren't players that are in the wrong position for what they do. Ryan Donato has been a little bit of a victim that early on here, where he's just not a guy that's going to impact the game very much in a fourth line role. He's not, he wouldn't be considered a stout checker. His analytic numbers are not super strong in terms of away from the puck. He's a guy that you've got to get into a meaningful role and see if he can score, because he's scored everywhere he's been. But if he's not scoring, he's a guy that you very easily can miss on. And I think the Wild have done a nice job of being patient. Nothing was happening earlier in the year. Ryan Donato was a guy that, you know, really would have been considered not doing much, but I don't necessarily think he was in a role to do much. Now that he is delivering, and he's been a nice story. But as I said earlier, a lot of expectation for him, Greenway, Eck. This is the next wave of guys. These are the guys that they need to replace the Niederreiters and the Coils and the Granlunds. And you know what? They've shown a ton, particularly the last 30 days, 5 weeks.
How would you describe the Wild coach? What is he different than most coaches?
Well, Bruce is the oldest coach in the National Hockey League right now. I'm sure he'd love me saying that, but he's also one of the nicest guys in the National Hockey League. And I think he's proven that he's a pretty darn good coach. The start couldn't have been any worse. You find out the most about people when things go wrong and get really ugly. And it was pretty ugly for the Wild. I'm sure Bruce was at the breaking point a few times. He certainly bent, but he never broke. And he's hung in there, and he's stuck to his guns. And he's got this team playing great now. And I think that's a testament to him. A lot of people entering the season figured that Bruce would just be a guy that came in, and we might as well let him coach his last year, and then we'll figure out from there. I think the thinking has probably changed a bit on Bruce because of the job that he's been able to do. Last year, there was a lot of rumors of dissension, players unhappy with the coaching staff. This, that, and the other thing. We saw it reach a crescendo when Jason Zucker said, you know, everybody's got to be better, including the coach. That raised a lot of eyebrows. You don't hear that from players. You know, they might talk about the group and other teammates. Very rarely do you hear a player talk about a coach needing to be better. But boy, it's really gone well from that point forward. You cannot deny how well they've played. You cannot deny how quiet it's gotten around the coaching staff, and those are good things.
You know, Brian, we watch through a fairly narrow lens of, you know, being here in the Twin Cities and Minnesota. You've got a broader view. What is the feeling toward the Wild around the league?
It's more of a macro view, Dave, in terms of what's going on in the National Hockey League. You know, teams, there's very few super teams. I think there's four groups that have probably separated themselves from everybody else thus far. That would be Washington, Boston, Colorado, and St. Louis, or another team is right on the cusp. After that, and this is what you have to understand, particularly if you're a fan, or even more importantly, if you're a manager, the next, 15 to 20 teams are very, very close. Anybody can beat anyone on any night. The Wild are in that grouping, and they were at the very bottom of that grouping when things went wrong, and now they're much closer to the top. This is kind of what I said to Craig Leopold when I met with him about the general manager's position back in August. That's just the way the league is. It's tighter than ever, and that's why you're seeing all these teams, not just the Wild. Look at all the other clubs that have had incredible streaks, and you know, then they've turned it around to be great. Dallas, San Jose, it cost their coach his job. Buffalo, up and down. We could go on and on and on. That's just a byproduct of the fact that there is a much bigger group of teams battling to be, a Stanley Cup contender. And I watch it play out probably a little more than most of the average fans here in Minnesota, because I am in tune with every team in the National Hockey League. But it's been really fascinating and interesting to watch. The Wild, as I said, they should feel really good about where they're at right now with what they've been through and what lies ahead of them in terms of the schedule. They're a team that's much closer than people probably certainly would have thought 6 weeks ago. And I think more than even people think now. So it's an exciting time for the Wild.
Brian, we do appreciate so much the chance we get to talk to you and having that perspective. You know, when you talked about the bubble, to hear the number 15 to 20 is a staggering number, a huge percentage of the league, but that should make the next 2 months or so interesting to watch as teams juggle for position. I think Sid wants to wrap things up. Sid?
Brian, it was a pleasure having you on the show, and for being on the show, we'll get you a MERS certificate, the best they can tell.
All right, Sid. Well, I appreciate that. But, Sid, we can never do a show without you asking me how Noel Ron is.
I'm laughing about that same thought, saying, did we make it? You want to give him an update?
No.
He put his headset off. I'm going to have to pass it on, whatever it is.
You guys pass him on. Of course, Noel Ron, my father-in-law.
Yep.
And we gotta always get that in there. Sid usually does.
The first interview in history with you in which Noel's name did not come up. Thanks so much. Happy if
my
we don't
pleasure,
talk to you, happy holidays.
Yeah, thank you.
It's Brian Lawton. All right, we'll be back right after this. We'll give you a little preview. We'll be talking to Thad Levine a little bit later in this hour, then Janelle McCarville at 11:05. So that's what lies ahead. We're off at 11:30 today to make room for the Bears-Packer game. You're listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid, Dave, and Mike. All right, let's talk baseball, more specifically Twins baseball. Always a lot of interest this time of year. The winter meetings are over. Some of the free agents have signed. Other free agents are available. The Twins are rumored to be in no fewer than four or five rounds of discussions with various players. Not all of them pitchers, some position players. Who better to talk to us about that than Thad Levine? And Sid, Thad Levine joins us right now.
Well, last year you did a lot of things after the baseball meeting. Is there a good chance you might do the same thing this year?
First of all, thanks for having me on, guys. And I'd say yes. You know, each offseason has a little bit of a different narrative and cadence to it. It seems as if this one's moving a little bit faster than the last two had. But 2 years ago, at the winter meetings, we saw a run on relief pitchers. This year, mm-hmm. we kind of saw a run on starting pitchers. So not too different from 2 years ago. We're still in conversations with a lot of agents as well as a lot of teams. One thing we haven't really seen heat up yet this offseason is the trade market. We also haven't really seen the position players heat up too much. And this is not uncommon. that the first wave of players signed in the offseason are catchers and starting pitchers. That's what's happened so far this offseason, but we're keeping our finger on the pulse of those two markets as well as the markets for the position players and the trades.
Thad, Dave St. Peter joined us at Dunkers this week in response to a somewhat similar question. I think the audience was somewhat intrigued with his answer because I think their all focus has probably been on starting pitching, maybe a little less so relief pitching. And he teased a little bit and said, you know, we are looking at a variety of options that could include virtually every one of our infield positions. Now, clearly they're not all going to happen, but he said you need to understand it's just not starting pitching. It's making the team better. And in doing so, there are a lot of different moving pieces on the table. Could you comment on that?
Well, I think generally speaking, not to oversimplify things, but the game is about preventing runs and creating runs. And I think most of our fans are looking at our team, as are the national writers, and saying they need to work a little bit more on the pitching side, on the preventing run side. But the reality is you can win in a variety of ways in this game. And we were a very formidable offensive club last year with really solid pitching. I think if we could add to a strength to help augment of our team, we're going to look at those options. And one of the things that I think Rocco has really stressed since he's come over here is just the versatility on defense. And what that allows us to do is really almost to pursue any type of position player that could be out there, because all three of our starting outfielders can play all three starting outfield positions. Our second baseman in Arias can play second base, shortstop, in the outfield. We know Polanco can play shortstop, and he came up in the minor leagues and played a lot of second base. Sano can play third base and first base. So we have versatility all over our starting lineup. That allows for, if we had the right opportunistic chance to strike on a position player that we genuinely believe could strengthen what was a really, really strong offense last year, we can go ahead and do that and just maneuver our existing group around a little bit and not sacrifice anybody's plate appearances.
Could Sano wind up being the first baseman?
You know, Sid, it's a consideration. He has played first base in the past in the major leagues. He always rises to the occasion. I think he does a nice job over there. We like the fact that he still can play at third base. I think the fans get to see one of his showcase tools is his arm. He's got a hand cannon attached to his shoulder over there and really makes some spectacular plays, does an extremely nice job on balls in front of him, coming in on the ball. So we've always wanted to keep him over there, maintain his versatility. But if we found the right partner over there, I think he could slide to first base, no different than, you know, some of those other guys, as I just mentioned, could maneuver around the field as well. And I think the more versatile the defensive player in today's game, the more valuable he is. It used to be that utility players, guys that could play multiple defensive positions, we looked at something lesser than an everyday player. I think in today's game, we've learned to value those guys to an extreme case. When we got Marwin Gonzalez last year, I think that really opened our eyes to the impact a player could have by playing multiple positions on the field.
You know, Thad, this time of year, there's so much emphasis on guys who are not on your team. I mean, they're going to make a play for Donaldson and Bumgarner, the names everybody's familiar with. But sometimes it's to the exclusion of guys who are on your team. And the statistics show, without question, you're a better team when Buxton is on the field. Can you give us an update on Buxton, his health right now, and what your expectations are for the coming year?
I think the best news for our fans is Buxton is on plan. He's on target. And the reason he had surgery and missed the last portion of the season last year was for the express purpose of being full go when we got to spring training. And he is tracking to be just that. He's working tirelessly. He's got we've hooked him up with a personal physical therapist and trainer close to his home in Baxley, Georgia, and he's been working diligently. We've been checking in with him periodically. We'll get another opportunity to do that in person here on Twins Fest coming up. But everything is pointing to the fact that Byron will be full go with no restrictions, ideally for the early part of spring training. And that is fabulous news. As you just mentioned, you know, it's hard to know exactly what to make of these types of statistics, but just the statistics play out. When he has been on the field, our team has just simply won a higher percentage of games. We're looking forward to having a full Byron Buxton back for 2020.
Will you spend the money, big money, for a top pitcher like the Yankees spent?
Well, you know, I think the Yankees, you know, we saw Gerrit Cole, we saw Strasburg set a record for the deal that he signed with the Washington Nationals to go back and continue playing there. Cole then, just a day later, broke that record. you know, I don't know that there's another player on the market that will command those that level of salaries. Those two guys are, you know, exceptional talents and pretty much generational free agents to be seen on the market. There are a number of pitchers still out on the market. We're still in conversations with quite a few of their agents. And the other element, which, as I mentioned earlier, really has not started taking shape yet, we're also talking to some clubs about possible trades. So we're aware of the fact that we would ideally like to add to our strength of starting pitching. We're going to be patient. There are a lot of options out there, and we may see at some point soon that we all may start shifting a little bit more to the trade market away from the free agent market. That has not come yet because there's still a lot of quality free agents out there.
You know, Thad, a year ago when we were having similar conversations, you guys made news with something we didn't see coming, and that was the signing of a couple of key players, Kepler and Polanco. Do you have ongoing discussions with members of your team right now? Because obviously it's not all help's going to come from the outside. You're going to be extending contracts, doing new contracts with some of the key members of this team.
And, Dave, the central goal there is when you bring a player to the major leagues, you control him for the first 6 years of his career, and we are aspirational of controlling these guys for longer, especially the ones that we think have a genuine ability to impact our chances of playing in playoff games and winning those playoff games. So we are constantly evaluating our stable of players, not just looking externally. And so I think that there will be a time in the offseason where we do shift our attention to having some of those conversations. Right now, we're trying to fill a few of the holes that are existing on the club. But once we do that and put that kind of in a stable situation, we will turn our attention at, because we do admire a lot of the young players we have here, and we are aspirational of having them here more than just the 6 years we otherwise would control them, so that our fans can watch these guys play through the majority of their careers.
When do you start arbitration doing arbitration?
So it's a great question, Sid. We actually have a lot of our players are in arbitration. So the first 3 years of a player's career is called pre-arbitration, and the negotiation is a little bit more unilateral, where the team has a little bit more control over the salary of the players. The next 3 years is a time where those negotiations become bilateral, and it's much more even footing for the agent and for the club. And we have a number of our players who are in arbitration, a lot of the big names that our fans have become used to cheering for. It's Berrios and Taylor Rogers and Duffy and May, to go with Sano, Rosario, and Buxton, to name a few. Adrianza, we already got done. So there's a lot of players we have in arbitration. Our internal group, I think, does a great job maintaining relationships with agents so that we can get amicable deals done. That process is going to start heating up here probably the first week in January. We have our exchange date where we have to exchange salary figures with the union at that time. Typically, deals get done within somewhere around 48 to 96 hours of that date. So I'd expect you're going to see a lot of our players signing probably the first week in January, and our group is currently working very diligently on that.
Well, sitting here in mid-December, all of a sudden, that's not too far away. Thad, there are a number of changes coming in baseball. I think one of the more intriguing ones is the addition of a 26th man to the roster. Clearly, you and Rocco and Derek talk about this all the time. How do you see the Twins using that 26th player?
Well, you know, it's fascinating right now, Dave, because we have our 12-man position player unit is so versatile that I think we could be highly specialized in this role if we so desire. I think the most attractive thing is probably to add yet another versatile defensive player, somebody who could play all over the field, to give Rocco just that another weapon. It will be a 13th position player. We're capped at carrying 13 pitchers, so I think we, like most teams, will carry 13 pitchers most likely, and then we'll carry a 13th position player. And so we've got a lot of candidates for that, guys who came up and really contributed last year, whether that's Jake Cave, Williams Astudillo, Lamont Wade, are three kind of guys who saw some real major league time last year. But we also have this wave of younger players coming up through the minor leagues, guys who maybe finished the season at Double A or matriculated to Triple A, who will be in consideration. Guys like Brent Rooker and Nick Gordon, who finished the year on the DL, Luke Raley as well, who we just added to the roster this offseason. All three of those guys probably would have finished the year in the big leagues had they been healthy. So we've got a great internal group of players that we can draw from for that 26-man, depending on what the team needs at a given time. You may see us rotate through a number of those names throughout the course of the year.
What about surgeries? If a lot of paper has surgeries and recovers from them after the season?
So, you know, the one player that we are monitoring very closely, Sid, right now is Jorge Polanco. He had surgery on his ankle. He had some scar tissue removed from his ankle, something that had been kind of nagging him throughout the course of the season, which makes it even that much more remarkable what he was able to accomplish last year, considering some of the limitations he really had physically. But right now he's tracking well. We're going to continue to monitor him. TwinSUS is such a great time, middle of the off season, for us to really lay hands on everybody. But with our new athletic trainer, head athletic trainer, Michael Salazar, he's been in very close contact with Jorge Polanco to make sure that his rehab program's going as we had hoped. Jorge has been committed, and he's spent a lot of time in Fort Myers working with our strength and conditioning group down there, as well as our medical staff. So I think we're optimistic about Jorge, but certainly something we're going to track as the offseason unfolds.
I've got a couple of friends who follow the Arizona Fall League fairly closely, and they were really intrigued with the play of Lewis this year, who wound up being the MVP in the league. They're questioning me, and I said, well, the next time we have either Thad or Derek on, I'm going to ask them, where do you pencil, maybe nobody uses pencils anymore, where do you put him in as a position? Because he clearly moved around a fair amount and showed some real outfield skills in Arizona.
Well, you know, Royce Lewis is you know, one of our top-level prospects, and we still view him as a chance everyday impact shortstop. But what we saw in the fall league that Dave's referencing here is that he went out and played center field quite a bit down there and did extremely well. Did so well that he was named the MVP of the league, which is really quite something, because there's a lot of talent in that league, a lot of young and up-and-coming future big leaguers who are playing in that league, and he really stood head and shoulders above that group this year. So one thing that maybe our fans don't know is that through most of his high school career, he actually did play center field. They had a very formidable shortstop on that team, and it wasn't really until later in his high school career that he got a chance to move in and play everyday shortstop. So I think what we learned about Royce is this is a baseball player. This kid can go anywhere on the field. Having the ability to play shortstop and center field at the major league level puts him in pretty rarefied air, and we're excited about his future. Where he ultimately lands will be up to him. I think we're looking at him first and foremost as a shortstop, but one who has the versatility to play two of the most demanding and impactful defensive positions on the field at a well above average level, which is tremendous for this franchise for the future.
Are you not going to sign Castro, the catcher?
So that was a really tough decision for us. We were in contact with Jason Castro and his agent. I think we think he had a real meaningful impact on this franchise for the 3 years when he was here. Really helped us transform our game planning, and our advanced scouting was basically exactly what we had hoped he would be, which was a pitching coach on the field. We ended up signing Alex Avila. We're very excited about his addition to the team. He has a ton of experience catching in the American League Central, primarily with the Detroit Tigers, secondarily with the Chicago White Sox. He brings a left-handed bat like Jason to complement Mitch Garver. And I think in Alex, we're also, from all the research we've done, he's had a real impact on young catchers in the game. We've got not that Mitch is that young, but he's still up and coming from a defensive standpoint. And then one of our better prospects on the horizon, we feel, is a catching prospect who may get a chance to spend some time around Alex and Mitch in spring training at least. And so we're very excited to be adding Alex to this team, and very appreciative, certainly, of everything that Jason did for this franchise for 3 years.
Thad, we got less than a minute to go. I want to ask a quick question, then Sid will wrap things up, and we appreciate so much your spending this amount of time with us. At the end of the year, we saw Dobnak, we saw Thorpe, we saw Smeltzer. If all things settle out the way they would you be comfortable with one of them as your fifth starter?
100%. I think that's actually our goal, Dave. I think that's our strategic plan. If things happen differently, so be it. But I think our hope is that those guys will compete in spring training. Somebody will get the nod opening day to be our fifth starter on our team. But we may see that group rotate through like they did last year and really supplement the strength of our team, which could be our starting rotation.
Okay, Sid?
Talk about the rookies.
No, we're out of time.
Thad Levine, a pleasure to have you on the air. And we'll get your emergency certificate, the best taking time. Thank you.
And Thad, thanks for spending a little extra time with us. It's so much fun talking Twins baseball with you. I can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys very much for having me on, and happy holidays to everybody.
Okay, that's Thad Levine. We'll be back at 11:05, and Janelle McCarville will be our guest at that time. In case you don't know, they're raising her banner today. Should be fun. Stick around. Sports Huddle, Sid, Dave, and Mike. All right, we're back, and how much fun is this? Big day at Williams Arena this afternoon. We'll be on our way over there right after the show to take part in it. Janelle McCarville is going to get her banner raised at Williams Arena. Well-deserved. She and Lindsay Whalen really put Gopher women's basketball on the map, and well-deserved recognition. We're fortunate to grab her for just a few minutes now. Janelle, congratulations on a well-deserved recognition.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate that.
I just want to tell our listeners, we don't usually refer them away from this show, but sometime in the course of the day, they want to go to Google. I may have the name wrong, but I think it's McCarville Picks, and it is one of the best, maybe minute and a half videos watching. And, you know, people remember you for your game in so many different ways, but the picks are great, and they're all captured in one compilation on there. Mike, I think you wanted to add something to that.
Yeah, we were just talking about before, and you didn't know you'd have such a shelf life after. Hey, what were you doing, by the way, what were you doing in Sweden?
I play basketball in Costa.
I know, explain, because you came back for this, but you came back from overseas. Explain what's going on.
So I play on a team in Stockholm. I'm also coaching a 16-year-old girls team there, so I have double duty. And my last game was Friday night. I woke up Saturday morning, headed to the airport immediately, caught a flight, almost missed my connection, ran through the airport, made my connection, got in last night, went to dinner with Waylon. Here I am today, ready to head to Williams.
You almost had to fight through a couple picks at the airport, they tell me.
Yeah, they saw me coming, though. They moved. They knew to get off the tracks when the train was coming through.
Smart people. Sid's got a question for you, Janelle.
What's your occupation now? What do you spend your time doing?
That would be Sweden right, and the coaching, yeah.
Is that
right
a full-time?
I'm in Sweden. Yes, I coach, like I said, a U16 girls team. I also help teach at a basketball high school, and I spend my evenings playing with the women's team. So I got three part-time jobs over there for the most part.
A couple of things. First of all, I read in the paper that Bolton and Schoenrock are going to be there today. It'll be like reunion of that team. That's going to be so much fun. But I wanted to – I don't know if this came up with Lindsay, but she had a great story last year, and you maybe know this. But they were in a tight game, and I think the Gophers had the ball with 2.1 seconds to go at the far end of the court. And Lamke, their big center from Wisconsin, like you, they call a timeout. And Borton Whalen says, all right, Bell, you got the best arm on the team. You're going to throw the ball to Lamke at midcourt. She's going to set a big screen. You're going to take off. You're going to go by her as fast as you can. She's going to give you the ball, and you're going to lay it in with a tenth of a second on the clock. And she said, does everybody understand? She turned to Lamke and said, do you understand what I mean with a big screen? She said, you want me to set a McCarville?
Nice.
Now
that's about how you know you made it when they refer to you setting the screen.
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun. I think that crowd is going to react so well today because a lot of people for a long time saying if anybody deserves to be up on that wall, it's you. And then how much fun you're going to be doing it in the presence of so many of your teammates.
It's awesome. I mean, getting the band back together like that. I know a lot of people are coming in. I'm excited to see them. I haven't seen them in quite some time, so. For everybody to be here, you know, they were a big reason for my success at the U, and I'm glad I get to share it with them again today.
It'll be fun. Sid's got another question. Sid?
How has basketball changed from the time you played to what it is now?
You know, I think everybody's, well, in this case, they're younger, they're faster, and they're stronger. You know, it's more up-tempo, a lot of penetration, drive, and kick. Find open players, maybe not as much set offenses from what I've seen. But for the most part, you know, their kids are getting up and down. They have more ability, better handles, and more one-on-one situations in my mind.
Do you and Lindsay talk coaching philosophies like last night now that you're both in the profession?
Every now and again we do, yes. Last night was less business and more fun and reminiscing. But when I've been in Stockholm and stuff, we have conversated a few times about different offenses and different sets to run and, you know, coach talk, basically, yeah. So
You know, Janelle, I had a chance.
I helped her a little bit, I think.
Go ahead. I had a chance to talk to Cheryl Reed, and your name came up, and I said, you know, you had a chance to work with McCarville. What are your thoughts? And she said, passing. She said, there are so many things people, she had so many good things in her game, but she said, I don't think people recognized enough what a great passer she was and her ability to spot somebody open and get the ball. She said, there were time and again when I thought nobody else could have made that play like McCarville did. That's nice praise.
It is good praise, and I do appreciate that, and it's very true. I take a lot of pride in my passing. You know, I feel a lot of people can always want to shoot the ball. You know, a lot of people go for rebounds, but not everybody can pass and get other people involved in the game. And I do feel like that is one of my strongest suits as a player, you know, in order to have a successful team, create for a lot of people in different situations. And, you know, I love throwing fancy passes. I love making other people look good at the same time. So it's, you know, a win-win situation for me.
Do you think it's difficult to teach post players to pass because either they have that in them or they don't? Because it seems like, you know, for some it's a black hole once they get the ball and you're not going to see it again. For others, there's an awareness. Can you teach awareness like that?
I do believe you can teach awareness. It just might take a little while. I've always been an unselfish player, pass-first type of player that coaches have had to tell me I need to shoot more. So in my mind, you know, it's an easy aspect of basketball. Some people, you know, nowadays everybody's all about stats. And if you're not putting up numbers, you're not going to, you know, perform and you're going to not be in the starting lineup. But there's roles that everybody needs to play on teams. And I think that's one thing kids these days have gotten away from is understanding that there's roles to be played and everybody has a spot and to play your role to the best. And mine was being assertive, a point post in that aspect. And yes, everything is teachable as long as the student wants to learn.
Janelle, we promised we'd keep you only 7 or 8 minutes, and our time is up. I just want to congratulate you again. It's a great achievement getting your name up, your picture up on the wall. And I'm sure the University of Minnesota has worked hard to prepare some highlight video to go with your induction, the pregame ceremony today. And it would be a real shame if they don't have a couple of your pics on there. But for our listeners who are savvy enough to go to the Internet, I think it may be McCarville pics. Google it, and you will be rewarded with some classic
yes.
moments.
There's some headbangers out there for sure.
Speaking of which, I want a little action on that Viking Packer game next week because I know you're going to be rooting for.
Oh, ouch.
Well, it definitely ain't the purple and gold, that's for sure.
Okay.
Hey, Janelle, congratulations. Look forward to seeing you this afternoon.
I appreciate it, guys.
All right, that's Janelle McCarville back with more right after this. Sports Huddle, Sid, Dave, and Mike. All right, we are back. Just a reminder, we're off in about 10 minutes today because of that pregame coming up. The station is carrying the Bears-Packer game, and the pregame starts at 11:30. One of the key players for the Vikings, once again nominated for their community service top award given in the National Football League. It seems like every year Kyle Rudolph gets that because he does, he and his wife do so much in the community. Sid had a chance to catch up. Let's listen in.
I mean, sit next to
me. Hey, you stay right there.
I got it.
Okay. You play with Harrison Smith at Notre Dame.
Yep.
He had another great game last week. Are you ever surprised how well he does?
No. I mean, Harrison's such a great player, and like you said, we've played together for a long time. He's a guy who can, at the safety position, play every level. He plays the run, he plays the pass, he can blitz the quarterback, so just so versatile back there. He gives our defense a lot of options.
What is so long, playing so long with a player in college and now here?
Yeah, like I said, we've played together since 2008. We've played together every year except for one, and that was my rookie year here. So we played together for 3 years in college, and now we've been together for 8 years here. So over the course of 11 out of the last 12 years, we've been together.
What did Notre Dame ever do for playing you in the NFL?
Notre Dame definitely prepared us to play in the NFL. I think when you play on a national stage week in and week out, playing against a lot of the best teams in the country, it allows you to be prepared when you make the jump to the next level.
Is this team focused on trying to win the division?
Yeah, that's our first goal at the beginning of every year is winning a division title. When you win a division title, you get a home playoff game, and we feel like we put ourselves in a position to have meaningful games in December, and it starts this week with the Chargers in Los Angeles.
Talk about playing the passing game without Thielen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had a lot of young receivers that have had to step up. We've had tight ends that had to step up. Tyler Conklin's a guy that's didn't have a catch until a couple weeks ago, and now he's making big plays for us in the pass game as well.
That change of offense when somebody Thielen goes out?
You know, it doesn't really change the offense. The big thing is, you know, guys have to step up. You know, when you lose a player of the caliber of Adams, we have to pick up the slack elsewhere on offense.
How much does it hurt Diggs with Thielen out?
I don't think it hurts Stephon at all. I think it gives Stephon opportunities. And then, like I said, we have other guys that can make plays to take the pressure off Stephon.
How do you make some of the catches you make? One-handed?
Practice. You don't just make one-handed catches by accident. It's something that you practice. Always catching balls, whether it's during practice, after practice, before practice. So when it comes in the game, it's something that you've done a lot of times.
How about your relationship with Cousin? Does that get better every week?
Yeah, I think he's gaining a trust in me that even though there may be people around, maybe traffic, that he can still throw the ball to me and I'll make a play.
Anybody help you as a player on the team?
I mean, there's always people helping me as a player, and I think that's one of the best things about this team is we have so many guys that are willing to help one another get better.
Talk about Irv Smith. How are these coming along?
He's a good player. He's a young football player, but he's a guy who works hard and tries to know his assignment on every play.
You're now fifth all-time in receptions. How important is that to you?
That just means I've been here for a long time. It's cool to be up there with those names. There's a lot of Vikings legends on that list, but I just try to do what I can to help our team win games.
Talk about your blocking in the new offense.
Yeah, it's something that I've done a lot this year. I've done a lot more than I've done in the past. It's something that I've taken pride in this year and something that I've had to work on.
Have you learned a lot from Gary Kubiak this season? What kind of a coaching is he giving you?
Yeah, he's a great coach that's had a lot of success. He's won a few Super Bowls in this league, and anytime you add a coach of that caliber, a system that's been proven in this league, you just try to learn as much as you can from him.
You've had a lot of offensive line coaches in your career. What does Rick Dennison give you?
He's like another guy that's been in this system for a long time, and you look at all the running backs that have played for Rico, and the success that they've had speaks volumes for him and his run game ability.
Are you glad you signed your contract?
Yeah, we love it here. We wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
What do you expect from the Chargers on Sunday?
I expect a really good football team. You know, their record is not indicative of the talent. They have a lot of talent on that team. They've been stricken by injuries, but they got a lot of guys back healthy, and they've lost a lot of close games. So they're playing hard, and we expect a four-quarter game on Sunday.
What do you expect from the Chargers on Sunday?
Four-quarter game.
They're pretty good. And Rivers is a pretty good quarterback.
Phillip is a great quarterback, future Hall of Famer.
How about playing the Packers and Bears at home at the end of the season?
It's great. You know, you have the opportunity to play two division games at home to end the year, and that'll allow us to control our own destiny.
Talk about your big part of the red zone.
Well, the red zone is an area that I feel like it can help this football team, and, you know, when I get opportunities down there, I try to score touchdowns.
Is this the most balanced run-pass offense you've played with the Vikings?
It's close. You know, in 17, when Pat Shurmur was calling plays, we were top 10 in rushing and passing. Since 2017, it's right up there with that year.
How do you take care of your body?
A lot of work, a lot of time in the cold tub, a lot of ice. We also have a great training staff here and a great strength staff that keeps me in good shape.
Have you seen Kirk Cousins go as a leader?
Yeah, I think Kirk is a guy that came in here right away and led by example. He's a guy that other guys on this team will naturally follow. And, his play speaks for itself. He's played great football this year.
How do you prepare the younger players for a playoff push?
Oh, well, I think the biggest thing in the young guys is, you know, they're used to being off or practicing for a bowl game. Once Thanksgiving hits, their season's normally done. And, you know, after Thanksgiving, we still have a quarter of our season left and the playoffs. So just trying to remind them that there's a lot of football left.
What do you want to do after playing football?
Well, hopefully I still play football for a long time. So I haven't figured that out yet.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, time for predictions. We got about a minute to go here. Sid, I'll start with you. Two games today. Who's going to win the Packer-Bears game?
I think the Packers will win for sure.
At Green Bay. Yeah, they're the favorites.
Except the only way they got a chance at quarterback for
Trubisky
for the Bears has been going crazy lately. I think the Vikings will definitely win, even though they're only a two-point favorite.
One-point favorite. Mike, two games.
So, Sid, you're saying the Packers, but the Bears might win. I'm going to go Bears on a roll and Vikings by two touchdowns.
Vikings by two touchdowns.
Yep.
All right, you're out on a limb. All right, I'm with in the uncomfortable position being with Sid on this one. I'm going to go with the Packers. I also see the Vikings win. I appreciate Rivers. I appreciate they may be underrated. I just think the Vikings are a better football team.
I do, too.
Than San Diego, and I think their defense will come through for them. I want to thank our guests today. This is that odd-shortened show. Richard Pitino, Mike Gensel with some great Doug Woog stories. Brian Lawton, Thad Levine, Janelle McCarville, and then a couple of Vikings on tape. We appreciate a couple of people tried to call in. We didn't have time. Try to call us next week. Got a long show next week. We look forward to talking to you. Always look forward to talking to you. We'll be back here, I think, 9 o'clock next week. Sports Huddle, Sid, Dave, and Mike.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.